Six Music.
BBC Radio, Six Music Documentaries.
This is a story of a famous dog. When the dog that chases its tail will be busy. These are clapping dogs, rhythmic dogs, harmonic dogs, house dogs, street dogs, dogs of the world unite, dancing dogs. Yeah, counting dogs, funky dogs.
I'm Matt Everett, and welcome to The First Time on Six Music. This is the show where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and find out about the seminal musical firsts that shaped their lives and their careers. This week's guest didn't just change the path of popular music, he took it to a far-out cosmic dimension. As the creative driving force behind legendary 70s bands Parliament and Funkadelic, he revolutionised soul music, leading it into some insanely creative and psychedelic territories. My guest this week is George Clinton. Here, George talks about his youth growing up in North Carolina in the 40s and 50s, his apprenticeship in doo-wop bands, working with both Motown and as a songwriter in the legendary Brill Building, and how he took his humble soul band, the Parliaments, and developed them into a multicoloured, platinum-selling, virtuoso, psychedelic funk-rock collective. One that's had an undeniable impact on artists like Prince, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Primal Scream, Kanye West, Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, and Outkast, many of whom he's worked with. As someone that changed the boundaries of live music stage production, George also discusses the Mothership, the iconic UFO stage set that he used to land inside at Parliament and Funkadelic gigs in the 70s. He also talks about the serious battle with drug abuse that stunted his career in the 80s and 90s, and also getting clean and his recent musical comeback. He's also the most sampled man in the history of music, and chats about his ongoing legal crusade to see musicians get recognised and receive royalties for their work being sampled, a battle that has taken him to the federal courts in Washington, D.C. But I start by asking George, as I do with all my guests, when was he first aware of music?
Probably about 10, 11 years old when I got to New Jersey. You know, after leaving Virginia, going to New Jersey, my cousin had moved up there earlier than me, probably a year before me. And by the time I got to Newark, New Jersey, she lived in Passaic, New Jersey. There was a group there called the Shirelles. They was making their first, or their second record, I forget which one, probably. Mama told me about this or something like that. Mama said. Carole King wrote it. They was rehearsing, and the record came out after hearing them rehearse. And so, oh wow, that's real.
Mama said there'll be days like this, there'll be days like this, my mama said.
Mama said.
I went walking the other day.
Then Frankie Lyman came out with Why Do Fools Fall in Love. He was about my age. So everybody wanted to be a singer at that time, around Jersey, New York, Brooklyn, and, you know, Harlem. And I had the bug from then on. But far as music, from 7 to 8, I heard my mother always play, you know, funky music. She was all, her and her sister would always be, you know, getting ready to go out, and you hear the songs. And be,
what sort of things did you...
It was Louis Jordan mostly. Saturday Night Fish Fry, Caledonia.
Caledonia's a great
make
song.
Make your big head so hot. Mop, dee 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 dee.
But she's my baby, and I love her just the same. Crazy about that woman, cause Caledonia is her name. Caledonia! Caledonia! I want to make your big head so hot. Ma, I love you. Love you just the same. I'll always love you, baby, cause Caledonia is your name. She said, son, keep away from that woman. She ain't no good. Don't bother her. But mama didn't know what Caledonia was putting down. So I'm going down to Caledonia's house and ask her just one more time. Caledonia! Caledonia! What make your big head so hot?
Yeah, so you remember, I remember all of that as a kid. And then, you know, like 56, Chuck Berry, Little Richard, Jerry Lee Lewis, Elvis. All of that hit the scene. But I was more into the doo-wop, you know, the Flamingos, Heartbeats, and all of the groups. Apollo used to have 5 or 6 groups, you know, every week and be there for a whole week. I'd skip school and go see him.
What was the best doo-wop?
Spaniels.
For why? Me,
I just love Pookie Hudson's voice. I think in most groups felt that way. You can tell Smokey, Curtis, everybody loves. Oh, baby, good night, sweetheart. Well, you know, I didn't know what it was called, but it was sexy. That's what it was. We were too young to understand what that meant, but we knew that girls scream when he sang. And everybody I knew after that, you know, had that, you know, Smokey, Curtis, all of them had that same, the people that I admired. You could tell that the Spaniards was definitely one of their favorite groups.
Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go home. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go home. I hate to leave you, but I really must say, oh, good night, sweetheart. Good night. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go home. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go home. I hate to leave you, I really must say. Oh, good night, sweetheart. Good night. Well, 3 o'clock in the morning. Baby, I just can't get right. Well, I hate to leave you, baby. Don't mean maybe, because I love you so. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time.
So, can you remember the first Parliament performances that you did?
Yeah, in junior high school in the gym. Everybody was singing on the Friday night party that they would have at the gym. And we would do talent shows or just sing at the gym. We did it all the time. We sung on the PA system. They got a PA system in 56.
For the sports, yeah.
Yeah, in the building. It's the first one, they said it was the first one that had ever been in a school. You know, a PA system throughout the building. This is 1956. And you could get on there and talk to everybody in the school at once. We sang on there.
So you sang for the whole school at the same time?
Yeah. We sang the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, which art in... You know, we did it like a gospel group, and we was like 16, 15.
I bet people have asked you a lot about working at Motown. Can you remember your first day walking into those offices?
Well, basically, our first day we was auditioning there. We had drove from Jersey to Detroit to audition. You know, you slept in the car, got there about 5 o'clock in the morning, right in front of the buildings, and you fall asleep and wait for them to open up.
Really?
You know, because we had drove from Jersey, we had no hotels and nothing. We just go to audition, and so we slept till they, and as we woke up, like 7:30, 8 o'clock, they started, like school, they started accumulating on the front lawn. You see Vandellas, you see a couple of Temptations and a Miracle and some Four Tops. All of them was just starting. They weren't that super star. You know, Vandellas had a hit record. The Miracles had hit records. But they was all just starting it. This was like 62.
That must have been so exciting.
Oh, it was exciting. We said that, you know, we looked too much like the Contours, and we sound like Temptations, and they had that already, so we didn't make the cut on that one. But I go back to New Jersey. Barry's wife had opened up the publisher in New York, Jill Bett, and a friend of mine got a job at Jill Bett, and he called me over there to write songs. So I ended up working for them by way of Barry's wife in the Brill Building in New York, which had all the other songwriters in the world there.
Most famous songwriting.
Lieberstroller, Carol King, Don Kirchner, his Colpicks, you know, Batch, Neil Sedaka, Paul Anka. Everybody had a cubicle in there from 60 on. Motown was it. So by 63, we was king of the hills. Tony Bennett was looking for songs. Sammy Davis Jr. Everybody was coming to Jobette because they had all the hit records. And it was not until I go out to Detroit after Jobette closed in New York, and I go out to Detroit and work for the competition of Motown, which was Golden World. And we ended up doing I Want to Testify, and it came out on the Revolut label.
Which was your first hit?
Which was our first hit, but 66.
It still sounds great, that track.
Oh, it really do. What? I mean, especially that Northern Soul, when you listen to it in context with all the other songs that we had done at Golden World and Rick Tick, Daryl Banks and all that stuff. It still, to me, it's like it was cut yesterday.
Interested about the kind of roots of the P-Funk sound. I mean, how does
all of that mix all of that together? I was telling you, and then you go on through and you meet up with Bootsy, and Bootsy bring Fred Wesley and Maceo Parker. You know what I'm saying? Joni come from No Higher Players, bring him and mix it with Funkadelic, the sound we already had, which was like the young Motown. My band Funkadelic learned from Jameson as kids. And Benny. So you had that, and all I did was tell them, turn up loud, and you sound like Jimi Hendrix. Yeah, Eddie Hazel loved to play blues anyway. We played on the Vanilla Fudge's amps one night, accidentally, because we didn't have no equipment. And that stuff was so loud. And then we realized, this is what Jimmy used to get that sound. We went back to New York, the Manny's music store, and bought so many Marshall amps, spent all our money on Marshall amps. Was the loudest band in the world, playing R&B music, but all of a sudden now it's like psychedelic.
Coming from
you keep everybody together? Were you like, I guess you were the kind of conductor. You look at footage from the performances, it's like, how does anyone control? Because they're all brilliant musicians, so there's a lot of egos there, yeah?
Yeah, so you have to, that's my only problem, is just being the traffic cop to all the egos, and everybody wants to play.
All the time.
All the time. So, you know, as they get older, you get a little better grip on it. But then they'll get too complacent, because they done played the same thing for 20 years, that you have to bring somebody in there younger, who's hungry. We got four of my grandkids, along with all the old members of the band. The grandkids grew up in the band. You know, Gary Scheider's son, the one who wore a diaper, he's passed, but his son is singing lead. He said, and you wouldn't tell the difference if you hadn't seen him in a long time, because he sounded like him, looked like him. And then you got Blackbird and Rick, you know, the guitar players that's been since the 70s.
Right now, don't mean someday it'll turn you out. You'll be out of sight. You really shouldn't ought to fight it. The music is designed to do no harm. It's just for you. For just a little bit of effort, I can't even wait. We might just turn you on.
In terms of the, how would you say, the kind of chemical indulgence, there did seem to be, you know.
Oh, chemical? No, we did drugs. And because we used to try to make a trendy chemical substance. No, we did from drugs to dope, you know, because the younger kids, they came from Plainfield, New Jersey, where they was 14 years old, and I had to get them out of there because they were learning heroin first, and that was like, you know, that was above me. I couldn't even, only thing I had done was smoke a joint. You know, but that was what the whole city was about. So they, I had to take them to Toronto and leave them up there so they wouldn't be able to find it. And the other part of the band started out like that, with the exception of Bernie Worrell. So we had to deal with our younger brothers being on heroin, and we just not finding acid, thinking we was in heaven. So we had all of that in 67, 8, 9. We was gone. We was on that trip, and I guess that's what gave us the freedom to do Free Your Mind, Your Ass Will Follow, and all the other experiments that we did, and to recognize that good as Motown was, it was peaking as a Motown concept. You would still get the Jackson 5, the DeBarge, and good groups, but that Motown spirit wasn't there anymore. We came there for that, So I think that's why we had ended up with so many people traveling around like that, because we always wanted to be with, like, Motown. And not only Motown, but I saw Phil Spector do it, you know, with the Ronettes and the, all his Righteous Brothers, and his whole Phil Spector sound. Ike and Tina Turner did it. You know, they had those big productions. Everybody was part of that. So we decided to just to make our Motown a traveling circus, and it probably still is that.
A fix, the judge of quits, the junkie eats his life for the dollar bill.
That was Funky Dollar Bill by Funkadelic, taken from the 1970 album Free Your Mind and Your Ass Will Follow. Produced and helmed by my guest on the first time this week, George Clinton.
Six Music.
Six Music.
Six Music. Six Music. This is BBC Radio.
Six Music.
Yes, our way out of our constriction. Gonna be freaking up and down the hang up alleyway. With the groove I only got, we shall all be moved. Ready or not, here we come. Getting down on the one which we believe.
My chance to dance my
I'm Matt Everett, and welcome back to the first time on Six Music, the show where we look at the key musical firsts in an artist's career. And my guest this week is a cosmic musical explorer, Mr. George Clinton, a man who in the 70s and 80s wasn't so much a space cadet as the admiral of the space fleet. And that song was Funkadelic's One Nation Under a Groove from the classic 1978 album of the same name. Now, if you saw Parliament and Funkadelic at that time live, you'd have been treated to seeing their stage set, the P-Funk Mothership, probably the most awe-inspiring stage prop in history. It was a 20-foot-wide aluminium flying saucer complete with strobes and dry ice that would descend from the rafters of a concert hall powered solely by funk. Upon landing on stage, George Clinton would emerge in his guise as Dr. Funkenstein, denizen of space and deliverer of Super Groover Lister Prozzy Funky Station. Why? Because he could. When was the first time that you had the Mothership on stage? Did it work all right?
It worked perfectly, but the wrong timing. See, when we did it, Jules Fisher built it for us. He gave us a script. You know, we land the Mothership and start the show. You know, the show started and the Mothership is coming out and you can't follow it. You know, once it lands, ain't nothing else that big for the rest of the night.
So it's almost you're peaking too high.
Too early. So we just rode in the big silver limousine that we had on stage and started the show off like that. Did the show and then called in the Mothership. Swing Down. New Orleans was the first time. The second one would have been Baltimore. And then we realized, oh, you landed after the show. And by the time we got to Dallas, Texas first, then Houston. That's the film that you see most of the time. 1976.
Because it's still pretty mind-blowing, even by today's.
Oh, yes. Once you realize that's a big, heavy, which is, you know, twice the size of this room. You know, that's lots of two semis to take all that stuff around. And you know it's in the Smithsonian now.
Yeah, is that actually true? Because the legend is it's in the Smithsonian Institute in America.
Yeah, it's going to be the lobby because they just built in this building. It'll be finished by the end of this year.
When was the first time you heard yourself sampled, though? You remember thinking, hang on a minute.
Wait a minute. It was the B-side of the Sugar Hill Gang record. It's the girl Sequence, Angie Stone, they was called, I forget what they was, Sequence, yeah, that was the name of the girls. That's the B-side of the Sugar Hill hit record. Dead in there, you got a real type of thing going down. That's on the record. We didn't know what this is. We never heard them. And immediately, De La Soul contacted us, and they wanted to do... and I had heard Knee Deep in clubs where they would start it off. Block-um, block-um, block-um. And go into another song. You use the intro from the drums, Knee Deep. You recognize it. Everybody knows Knee Deep. Ooh. They know that's getting ready to come on, but that's the way they would get you to the floor. Just let you hear the beginning of it and switch to another song. I had heard that done a few times. But here they, me, myself, and I, the whole thing is a record. And they paid us $100,000. That was like, cool. They were the only ones. Paid. We never got paid like again. The Mothership, and it's the birthplace of most of your hip hop music. That album, Mothership Connection, was sampled so much. So it's not just us and all that we did around it, but it's your Dre's and Snoop's and Public Enemies and Rakim's and Ice Cube. It's everybody that did Tupac's. I mean, it's just everything that you can think of sampled. That album and the succeeding albums.
Mirror, mirror on the wall. Tell me, mirror, what is wrong? Can it be my daylight clothes or is it just my daylight song? What I do ain't make believe. People say I sit and try, but when it comes to being daylight, it's just me, myself, and I.
For me, myself, and I. Myself and I. It's just me, myself, and I. It's just me, myself, and I. It's just me, myself, and I.
This is BBC Radio 6 Music.
Was there a point in the 80s, maybe, when you were like, this has gone too far, I've got out, the business is falling apart, musically I'm not doing my best stuff?
I missed it in the 80s and most of the 90s. It wasn't until I got to 2000 that I realized I can make music. I was always able to make music, but if I don't have my wits upstairs, I won't be able to deal with what it takes to make to get the people to hear the music.
How did you pull out? How did you stop? How did you manage to change?
Once I realized that that's what I had to do, I could not make music good enough to get it played or anything. Because, you know, it's an age thing after a while. No matter how good the music, I can get a record on Outkast, Big Boy, or Snoop. I can get records, Tupac, and they hit all over the place. But they wasn't going to play mine because they know if I get straight, and I'm going to fight for that money they owe me. So they weren't about to try to help me. I haven't ever got paid for most of those guys' records.
That's terrible.
But we're like that, so I didn't want to jump in it. Because they want me to fight with Bootsy, the people around me. Because I can blame anybody, you know, get my money. That ain't going to do nothing. It's the record companies who have a conspiracy together. I can be clear-headed when I started blaming people. Because I remember we used to laugh at Little Richard. When he say, I made this, I did this, and you know, people don't feel sorry for you if you done something, whatever, or if you just look a little, you know, out of the ordinary. People don't feel sorry for you. So I knew I couldn't come in doing that. I had to come in. Hey, I was hard when I started. I'll be hard when I get through. And that's my motto. That's my mission. If you get the book, you read it. It's like brothers be yo, like George. Ain't that fucking kind of hard on you? I say I was hard when I started. I'll be hard when I get through. That's what I got to be, and I got to live up to that. the things that I'm going through right now to all the way to the Congress, because it's been a conspiracy of underground negotiating with the labels amongst themselves so they don't have to pay these artists. They kept it away that you were supposed to even get paid. They kept that away from you, especially, you know, you're still on drugs, so it wasn't hard to do to keep it away from you. But as soon as I cleaned up, I got on a mission that I'm still on, and it gave me enough energy to refuel myself to do the album we got out. Now, Shake the Gate, it's got 33 songs on it. 33 songs, one on Kendrick Lamar's album, two on the group over here, Rudimental.
Great band.
Great band. Josh Stone, Boy George. So I got a lot of stuff coming out this year, and I tried to aim it around the time that the Mothership was going to be unveiled at the Smithsonian.
Mother Earth is pregnant for the third time, for y'all have knocked her up. I have tasted the maggots in the mind of the universe. I was not offended, for I knew I had to rise above it all or drown in my own shit.
I've got to talk to you a little bit more about Maggot Brain, just because it's such an important record, man. It's an important record. People hadn't made anything that sounded quite like that before. You say the other engineers were like, we don't know what he's doing. What else can you remember from sort of recording it?
Just felt good. Eddie was playing so good. And I knew it had to be weird, not just to be a regular just R&B song, because that's what it would have been with the beat. But taking the beat, taking the drums out and the bass out, I could do all that slapback echoes, and Eddie could play around with the echoplex. He played good. But I did more echoplex in the studio that he couldn't even hear. So you got a lot of, sound like airplanes, and that's what the engineers thought was going to distort. But I was pulling the fader down as I overload the track. And so I pretty much had it, even though I was, like I said, again, tripping my butt off. I was able to ease one down while the other one go up that you don't notice. It never gets in the red for long, you know, a little bit. But it felt good. And sometimes it'd be overloading with the volume way down. You could hear the energy of the overload. But it was so low over here that it don't hurt your ears. And it was just about, I watched Jimi Hendrix make, you know, love music out of feedback. He turned noise into religion. We can appreciate anything when it's nurtured and fed to you. Any tone, any sound, we just play with that. And like I said, the engineers didn't want no part of it. And we weren't trying to do hit singles. After Testify, I knew, oh, if you get two or three flops as a single, you're out of here.
So it's about album.
It's about album. Don't even try to do singles. So you're not even in the bag of trying to do singles. You weren't even trying for. Consequently, they had to edit some. Like, I bet you they had to edit songs down so they could play them because they liked them. But we had them too long and we didn't care.
Very long.
You know, real very long. And we didn't care.
Thank you.
I saw you at the Brixton Academy playing with Primal Scream. And I remember that gig going on for about like 8 hours or something. How did you first meet? Because that's a dangerous mix of people.
I love Bobby. Yes, you know, I can never understand him. He probably couldn't understand me either.
How did you first meet then?
I have no. They asked us to do a record, same way the Chili Peppers did. You know, when we do a record, and they told me what they wanted to. When I, you know, the album cover that they had was Eddie Hazel on one side and the Confederate flag on the other, which was the perfect contradiction. You know, that's definitely good manners. I thought that was funny, you know, as hell. So, and then they sounded good. It was a really funky band, and they had good R&B taste, you know. Yeah, it's a yes.
What were the sessions like? Did you get anything done? Much? Did you get much done? Did it take a
look? Yeah, we did an album. But they would, you know, they would come over there and do it when they wanted to. We didn't get together until we got ready to mix it. They came over and gave me some stuff. I met them in Chicago. We did some more stuff.
Because it was a kind of a crazy time for them too, as well, I guess.
Yeah, oh yeah, they was out there too, and I was. But see, by then it wasn't, you know, fun being out there. I was, you know, struggling with crack then. Now it's no fun. Acid was, you couldn't stop it. I wish I hadn't done it. You ain't got nothing else to do with it. Once it start peaking, everything is beautiful. People are beautiful. Ugly people are beautiful. With crack, everybody's ugly. Everybody's ugly on purpose.
Including yourself.
Including yourself. I go around the world now touring and see places that I used to come that I only knew by, only recognized those places by where I could buy some baking soda at. Or where I could do it. Not that I don't feel bad about it. I just feel, damn, I was stupid until I got myself together. You know, but I still know that was, most people probably wouldn't tell that. But I recognize the world in the prospect of, where am I going to get my drugs, or how am I going to make my drugs? Where am I going to get the ingredients? And I mean, damn, you're so stupid. But I got out of it 5 years ago, and I'm glad to be able to talk about it, laugh about it, and still be ready to work.
Prince was over, he played Shepherd's Bush, and I saw you in the audience and the balcony, and he gave you a wave. When did you first meet Prince? Because he's kind of like your sort of godson in music, isn't he, really?
Yeah, I mean, when we saw him show up at one of our shows, 77, I think it was, he was getting warnings we didn't even know, but he just looked like Boots, he looked like a Funkadelic. He was so dressed up. It wasn't until later, we just like Kendrick, you saw that flash in his, what he put out. I didn't necessarily like the first record that much because I didn't hear that much. But I could see that the kids was loving it. So I ain't the one to fight. I'm sorry. I'm going to find out what it is. So we took his record to the person that broke most of our records in Detroit. It's called Mojo, Midnight Funk Association. Mojo played it and it worked. Everybody that we had working for us went to work for Prince.
Really?
Right, around 80, right, when we I'd call myself laying back, probably just doing drugs, you know, but I would call myself going to make the music and let them tour. That lasted one tour, and I had to go back.
What's the Prince song that you got a big love for?
It's going to be Purple Rain. I mean, you know it, Dolphins.
Will you know if I'm even in the right key? You make me stop before I stop.
does my brother have to go hungry? And you told him there was food for all. This is the man that stands next to the man. Stands to catch you when you fall.
Must also be just really good to kind of now be recognised and getting the recognition for the music, as well as the legal stuff, but just also being seen, you know, playing big shows.
I mean, the band never laid that. Once we started saying, no, we got new stuff, new energy up front, and then you hear Maggot Brain and all those old songs, you appreciate it more. Because it actually makes the older people like, I know I can play it asleep, but I better wake up and play it. And that's what's happening right now. We're having so much fun jumping around and clowning. Because the kids are being able to get out there and clown. And people like that don't know us, oh, he's with Kendrick Lamar. He must be somebody. So they like Snoop. They'll say, wow, that's one of Snoop's songs. He's doing De La Soul's song. All I got to do is get my ego out the way. I know how it happened, but at least I'm in the game now. And then they learn 6 months later, oh, you're the one made it in the first place. As long as I ain't the one saying it. You know, it don't bother me as long as you hear the funk. Once you hear it, you're going to get hooked. I don't care who brought you here.
And the final thing, we'd like you to pick a song that we're going to finish the interview with. What should we play?
We should play Pole Power.
Why that one?
I just like that. It's the new album. People seem to like it.
Then that's the song we'll play. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cause mama, I'm sure hard to hell and I yes around. Action, speech louder than word, and I'm a man with a great experience. I know you got you another man, but I can love you better than him. Take my hand, don't be afraid, I wanna prove every word I say. I'm advertising love for free, so won't you place your ad with me? Boys will call my dime by the dozen, but that ain't nothing but 10 cent love. Pretty little thing, let me light the count, cause mama, I'm sure hard to hell and I yes around. Baby, here I am,
I'm a man on the scene. I can give you what you want, just come go home with me. I got some good old loving and I got better in store. When I get through throwing it on you, you got to come back for more. Boys will call my dime by for loving, but that ain't nothing but drugstore love. Pretty little thing, let me light the counter, called Mama, I'm so hot to hell and I, yes sir, I am. Give me some good old love, some of your good love. I'm a big old man.
I suppose that's the price you pay. Well, oh, it isn't what it was. She's thinking he looks different today.
You're about to hear a shortened version of the Morning After Mix, a carefully curated playlist available in the BBC Sounds app. It's full of gentle songs for when you need a musical rescue or escape. To find the full version, just search Morning After in the app. But for now, enjoy the calm.
It's raining today, and I'm just about to forget. Train window girl, that wonderful day we met. She smiles through the smoke.